Okay, so today will also be unusual because it will be a Blackboard talk.
Ooh.
So, I mean, there is a handout and there is something on the screen, but mostly I will use the Blackboard. But first of all, I'll alternate, okay? But maybe I'll just remind you, our goal is to find, so goal for today, to find an expansion Z. Is this readable? Is this?
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, one solution is to come closer.
That's true.
So, okay. Z, going from knots into the associated graded of knots. But today I want to use high algebra. And the result will be the Drinfeld theory, or will be related to the Drinfeld theory of associators. And I have to tell you that I'm using a very non-traditional approach to the Drinfeld theory of associators. And there are two reasons. One is that it relates well to what I will do tomorrow. And the other reason is that it's much more elegant than the traditional approach. But the price you pay is that if you already know the traditional approach, or if you want to read other people's papers, you have to learn the dictionary. Okay? So, apologies. Anyway, what's high algebra? So the thing that I call high algebra means present this using generators and relations, and find and guess values for the generators in such a way that they satisfy the relations. Okay? Now, unfortunately, it's completely hopeless because in knot theory, there are simply no operations. There are no interesting operations on knots. You know, you can take the connect sum of two knots, but the resulting monoid is not remotely finitely presented. Essentially, you hardly save anything. There are cabling operations, but they only get you ultra complicated and very special knots. So basically, knots are simply not a good algebraic structure. They don't have interesting algebraic operations on them. Okay. That kills the project from the start. I like to say that sort of knots are like the candies or the desserts. Okay, they're cakes, they're lovely. Everybody likes them because they're beautiful. But we have to study the ingredients that they're made of and how to make things out of ingredients. Okay? So, the theory of ingredients that I will use is again a non-traditional one. Often people talk about tangles or braids or whatever, but I want to talk about knotted trivalent graphs. So what are knotted trivalent graphs? So I want to define to you what is the set KTG of a graph gamma. So the graphs that I will consider are trivalent, so where gamma is itself a trivalent graph. Okay? So what is a trivalent graph? Well, an example is this one. Okay? But of course, you know, also this one. But in fact, I want slightly more than graphs. I want what you could call band graphs or framed graphs. So a band graph is a graph which you draw using the wide side of a chalk instead of the sharp side of a chalk. So basically it has bands for edges, and the bands are connected in vertices that locally look like the connection of three bands. Okay? And what it really means is that each edge has two sides, and you have instructions when you go into a vertex and you enter from one side of one edge, what side of the other edge, or which edge are you going to come out with, come out at, and at what side of that edge? Okay, so it's a slightly bit of further combinatorial information. And the KTG of gamma is simply the set of all embeddings of a graph like this in R3 modulo motions, modulo deformations. So if you want a few examples, here are a few. So the first example is shown with the band structures, and this is really a knotted theta graph. If you look at it, it's this theta graph. By the way, does anybody recognize this knotted theta graph?
What do you mean?
Have you seen it before? So the answer is yes, you have seen it before. This one is equivalent to that one.
Not knotted.
So in fact, it's unknotted. It appears knotted.
Okay.
It looks very much like it is knotted, but it is not. And it's kind of a lovely challenge to figure out that how it is not knotted, okay? And in fact, by the way, when you know, there are belts that you can buy that are made of repetitions of this pattern, rings that you can buy that have this pattern, it's kind of common. And you kind of see a piece of leather with this kind of knotting, and you ask yourself, how did they do it? And the answer is, they did it, they could have done it because it's unknotted. Anyway, yes?
Why we are interested only in trivalent graph?
Because that's what works. Sorry, that is the answer. This is the honest answer. Okay? So here's a second example, and here I didn't bother to indicate the band structure. The band structure is the same as the band structure as in the plane, as the plane indicates, just thicken it in the plane. Okay, and here's a third example. And this example, if you would remove this edge, will become that example, just bent. But with this extra little edge added, they're actually not equivalent. This is actually not unknotted. There's no way to undo it once this edge is present. So undoing this involves motions that somehow cross an extra edge that goes from the top to the bottom. Okay? Okay, good. Now, what did I want to tell you about them? So, unlike ordinary knots, KTGs have lovely operations. So, basically, if you have a KTG with two vertices facing each other, and by convention, when I draw things on the blackboard, I mean that the band structure was obtained by using the thick side of a chalk, okay? By the thickness on the blackboard, if you wish, okay? So there are two obvious things that you can do. You have a KTG and you have an edge marked on it, or more precisely, the KTGs that I'm talking about are fully labeled. So each edge has a name. So you tell me delete edge E, and the result is this. Now, strictly speaking, I am only drawing the parameter space. So really, this is what you would call a capital gamma, and this is the result of deleting the edge E in capital gamma. But corresponding to it, there is an operation, lowercase gamma, which is a knotting of capital gamma, going into delete the edge E in lowercase gamma, and this is a knotting of the graph that you get by deleting the edge E from uppercase gamma. Okay? So in other words, I described an operation on the skeleton, but you can obviously just remove this edge once the thing is knotted in R3. Okay? There is also an operation called unzipping the edge gamma, and unzipping the edge gamma is, sorry, the edge E. So unzipping the edge E produces a graph like this. And of course, you can do it when it's embedded in R3 just as well. So right, if I have my band, my usual band. So if I have my band and it's knotted in R3, right, I can cut it through the middle just as well. And I get two parallel bands that do the same thing, that follow each other. OK? And then there is a binary operation. Both of these are unary operations. And then there is also a binary operation, which takes a pair of knots, so a pair of KTGs, so say this one and this one. And you have to mark an edge on this one and mark an edge on that one, or choose an edge on this one and choose it, or not choose, be given an edge on this one and an edge on that one. And in fact, you also have to choose a side for each edge. But let me ignore this. Let me not get too detailed. And then there is the operation called the exterior connect sum along these two edges. And it takes this KTG and this KTG and produces the one that you would get by adding an edge connecting the two chosen edges. Exercise, this is topologically well defined. Namely, so if I have, you know, a KTG here, and it's a big mess of vertices and tangles and everything is knotted, and another one here, there is a canonical way, and I choose an edge here and I choose an edge here, there is a canonical way to add an edge in between them. So a priori, the edge E that you choose here could be buried deep inside this big ball of wires, right? So even if it's buried deep inside this big ball of wires, there is a canonical way, or it doesn't matter how, I pull it out of the big cluster of wires. And again, it doesn't matter how I push it in to the big cluster of wires on the other side. Why? Yeah?
You can shrink the second one. Then.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, so I have a cluster here. I add an edge connecting the two. I want to show you that I can move this edge to a different position. So I take this one, shrink it until it's tiny, 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 tiny. Pull it back along the edge that I already have. Now it's inside this cluster of wires. I pull it out in a different way and expand it again. And I've changed this side of how I went out. Now if I want to change the other side, I do the opposite operation. Anyway, so by the way, it's tempting to think, why isn't there an operation of adding an edge? So suppose I have two edges on the same KTG. Yes?
So these are band graphs, right?
Sorry?
These are band graphs.
Are what?
Bands.
Bands, yes, yes.
Yes, so when you add this band, then you have to take care
yes,
of this?
So there is a tiny further combinatorial information that I'm not stating here, which is whether to add the band with one twist or with no twists. And these are the only two choices. Okay? There is the choice of which side of the edge to connect to, and whether the band gets added with twists or without, and I don't want to bother to state it. Okay? But it's a tiny bit of extra combinatorial information, it makes no difference at the end. So if there is no univalent add an edge operation. Unary add an edge operation. Only a binary. So, you know, there is no operation here which you would call connect E to E prime, which would look like this, which would add an edge between E and E prime, because that's topologically not defined, not well defined. How would you do that? if it's really knotted and it's a big cluster of things, the choice of the edge to how to add these edges is not, there's no way to do it. Okay, but here you can. So this doesn't exist. Okay. Anyway, claim, I want to tell you four good things. Four good things about KTG, about KTGs. So one, it is useful. And by useful, I mean that there is something called algebraic knot theory, which is mostly my dream, but sooner or later it will become reality. And you can use KTGs to describe it. I'll tell you in a minute. Two, it is finitely generated with these operations. The set of knotted trivalent graphs is finitely generated, so it's appropriate to start computing invariants by just defining them on generators. Okay, so it's finitely generated, and in the appropriate sense, also presented. So also all the relations are known. Three, so you know, the filtrations that I defined on knots was actually somehow not related to the filtrations that I defined in the first day using augmentation ideals, etc. But the moment I replace knots by knotted trivalent graphs, it becomes an algebraic structure. And then you can talk about augmentation ideals and powers of augmentation ideals, etc. And you and the theory you get is equivalent to the theory when you restrict your attention to ordinary knots. The theory you get is equivalent to the theory that we described in the second lecture. So two, augmentation ideals are back. And, sorry, this is three, I think. And four, this is all compatible with configuration space integrals. So it's easy to show that if you know how to compute configuration space integrals for this graph, then you know how to compute configuration space integrals for this one, or for that one. Okay? And I should say that this is sort of not fully done, in the sense that nobody ever wrote it up, and there are analytical complications that nobody ever considered, but at least on the naive level, it's compatible with configuration space integrals. So maybe I'll tell you why, very, very quickly, and get into the details later, okay? And move on to the other topics, okay? So suppose I knew all configuration space integrals that pertain to this graph. In other words, whenever you gave me a diagram whose skeleton is on this graph, whenever you give me a diagram like this, well, I can form a configuration space integral and I can compute it. Okay? So suppose I know the value of this configuration space integral and also all others, I don't know, also, I don't know, this one. Okay? How do I compute the one associated with this? Well, here, this edge doesn't exist. So the configuration space integral corresponding to this diagram simply doesn't exist. However, had the diagram been a different one, so one that does not touch the edge being removed, the configuration space integral is unchanged. So this is easy. How about this one? So basically you can take this diagram and you can lift it to this picture. It would look like this. But there are four ways to lift it. You can, each vertex that used to be on the edge that got doubled can be either lifted to here or to here. So there are four different ways to lift it. Each way of lifting it gives the same integral at the end, because the separation here can be made as small as you wish, and the integrand is a continuous function of this distance. So at the limit, when you take epsilon small, if you knew this integral, you know all of these. Okay? So without details, and over here you can make these two parts separated arbitrarily far, and you can show that this really means that the configuration space integrals that contribute are only ones that are localized on the left or localized on the right. And then if you knew what they were before the connection, you also know what they are after the connection. So this is very loose, but in principle, but it should work. And the algebraic version of it works. So, okay. Good. Now, about algebraic knot theory. So what do I mean by algebraic knot theory? And also this I also want to do very loosely. So there are various classes, so, you know, there is the big space of knots, the big set of knots, but there are various subclasses that one wants to consider and one wants to study. In particular, there are so-called ribbon knots. There are other classes that, for which this process applies, but I want to concentrate on one example. So there is something called ribbon knots. What is a ribbon knot? So a ribbon knot is a knot which bounds a disk. So you can find a disk whose boundary is your knot. Now, obviously, if you could find such a disk that has no self-intersections, then the knot is trivial because you can contract it along this disk. But a ribbon knot is a knot that bounds such a disk that has a certain type of singularities, that is allowed to have a certain type of singularities, but not a certain other type of singularities. So a ribbon knot is a knot which bounds a disk that is allowed to have ribbon singularities. So here is one part of the disk, here is another part of the disk, each of them looks like a band, and they are allowed to intersect in the manner shown here. Okay? However, you're not allowed to have so-called clasp singularities, which is, well, here one part of the disk comes from the left, the other part of the disk comes from the right, and the line of intersections connects the boundary back to the boundary. Here the line of connects, so, how should I say that? Well, it looks like that. I mean, I could say it, but I would just say locally looks like this. So, example, this knot is a ribbon knot. Well, you can sort of see the ribbon. The ribbon is this band here, which gets thickened into, so it, you can see the disk, okay? Mm-hmm. The disk is this band here, which gets thickened to a handle, and well, get thickened to a handle on the other side. And if you imagine the intersections, you find an intersection here, which is clearly of ribbon type, and another one, and another one somewhere here, and both are of ribbon type. So that's a ribbon knot. On the other hand, try as you wish to find a disk with only ribbon singularities for the trefoil, and you'll fail. So some knots are ribbon knots and some knots are not ribbon knots. And it's very hard to decide which is which. And why is this related? So it turns out that there is an algebraic description of the set of ribbon knots within using not a trivalent graph. Namely, the set of ribbon knots is the set of all unzips of gammas, where gamma is a knotting of this graph, a dumbbell, with the property that the delete the middle edge of this graph gives you the unknot. So here is an example. Here is a knotting of the dumbbell. If you delete the central edge, you get the unknot. But if you unzip it, you get the knot I talked about before. And the claim is that all ribbon knots arise in this way. And the reason I did here a tilde instead of equality is because there is a small lie. And the small lie is that you don't really need the dumbbell. You need to use multiple dumbbells. And the delete operation would be to delete all of those, and the unzip operation would be to unzip all of those. And then it becomes an equality. Okay? Now what's the point? The point is that if you have an invariant which is of knotted trivalent graphs, which is well behaved under unzips and deletes, then you get an algebraic, you get an algebraic handle on ribbon knots. I will not go further into it, but you get a handle on analyzing ribbon knots. Now, if you end up finding an expansion for knotted trivalent graphs, which is homomorphic, which respects the operation, in particular, it's an invariant which respects these operations. So you might be able to say something about ribbon knots, and likewise about several other classes of knots. Okay. Okay, and here's a part that I actually want to do carefully. So I claim that our set is finitely generated. The set of knotted trivalent graphs is finitely generated. So, I will simply show you how to generate some specific knotted trivalent graph using our operations. So, I claim that the set of knotted trivalent graphs is generated using the operations that we have available by the unknotted tetrahedron, which is of course a knotted trivalent graph, and let's call it the Mobius band. So a circle with a single twist in, with a half twist in it. Okay? Okay. So, first thing to know is that you can actually do a little better than this external connect sum operation. So, if I have one KTG with a vertex here, so this is some KTG, and another KTG with another vertex facing it, V prime, then I can do the following. So, well, first of all, I can copy them. That's not terribly interesting. Okay? And then I can add, using the external connect sum, I can add an edge in between, right? And then I can unzip this edge, so I get a picture like this. Well, this is the same. Let me just pull the lower half a bit straighter, so it looks like this. And now I can unzip this edge, and I get a picture like this. And actually, everything should have happened in a small neighborhood, so it looks like this. So this is sort of you replace a pair of vertices in two disjoint graphs, in two disjoint KTGs, with a three-lane highway that connects the neighborhood of one vertex to a neighborhood of the other vertex. Okay? Good. Okay. So now, suppose I wanted to, using the two things that I have, using these two, suppose I wanted to produce the trefoil. And, you know, if you want to complain that the trefoil has no, is not really a graph, it has only a circle, so let's add another edge just to show you what I do. Okay? So, what do I do? So, first of all, I regard the trefoil, I regard what I wrote over here as sort of a blueprint. This is where I want to get. Okay? And I will use red chalk to show you what I have already gotten or what I can get. And the hope is that at the end, I will be able to turn the trefoil entirely red. So this is the goal. And by the way you do it goes back to the Vietnam era. So you sort of want to turn everything red, the whole region, okay? So here's why how you do it. You start by placing red infiltrations, red cells, in key locations. So you put a red cell here. And what I mean by a red cell is that I replace a small neighborhood of this vertex by a tetrahedron. Again, white doesn't exist. White is just my blueprint, it's just my plan, it's where I want to go. This is a tetrahedron, I can use tetrahedra, it's one of my generators. So in other words, I just put a tetrahedron somewhere in place, in space. Then I put another tetrahedron around this vertex, and another one around this vertex. Really, all I do is I surround each vertex by a circle and connect the internals. So I have now a tetrahedron around every vertex. Am I done? I think so. Yes. Okay? Then I link up my infiltration cells. Okay? What does it mean? I mean, I take the connect sum of this one with this one. The vertex connect sum. So I get a three-lane highway connecting this one to this one. And likewise, I link up this one with this one. I get a three-way highway, lane highway connecting this one with this one. This I can still do because these were disjoint before connecting them. So I can keep doing it until I get a tree of connections. Which one should I do next? Maybe I'll connect this one to this one the long way. Why the long way? Why not? Okay? And finally, this one to this one. Not that it matters how, but I'll do this one. Okay? Okay, now all my cells are connected. What I really want to do is to continue connecting this one and this along this one and along. I want to continue these connections, right? But I can't. Well, if I could, then look what I will have. The middle lane in each three-lane highway, if I did all of these extra connections, the middle lane would be the knot I wanted. So I'll just delete everything else and get what I wanted. Unfortunately, I can't do it. Okay? So, but what I can do is I can start taking over states. So I'll slide my red line, my red front, from, now I have a red front, and I'll just slide it across the states in the region. So I'll slide this red from where it is now to the other side of the state, and now it is here. Okay? That was nothing. That was an isotopy. Now I'll do an operation. I'll unzip this red. So unzipping it will give me a pair of parallel reds. Now, the one here is where I wanted it to be. The other one is ready to slide further. Actually, not quite ready because I don't know where to slide it. So instead, I'll take over this state now. Okay. So this state has an edge all around it. So I'll slide it from one side to the other side, and then unzip. Okay? And now this edge surrounds this space, so I can slide it to the other side. That's again an isotopy, that's the do-nothing operation. So it gets to here, I unzip it when it's here, and then I slide all of this to the other side of this state, and it goes away. And I guess I also want to unzip, so it comes out like this. And now I manage the last free state remaining, and then all the states will be nicely red. Okay? And what I have is the original KTG with one circle all around it. Delete this one circle and you are done. Alternatively, I could have, instead of deleting it, I could have done one unzip less and then sort of, if I had stopped one unzip before the end, I could have done well, just as well. Okay? Is it clear?
Why do you need the other generator?
Aha, because I lied to you. You see, I used two types of tetrahedra. I use this one, and I use this one. They look the same. You think they are the same, but as ribbon graphs, they are different. If you want to turn this one into this one, you have to pull this edge out. And as you do it, the edges of the core, it comes out this way. And then sort of the vertices are misplaced, you have to turn them over. If you turn them over, you get twists here, 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 and here. And exercise for you, you can twist an edge, or half twist an edge, by taking the connect sum with a Mobius band and then doing an unzip. Okay? So I've used both generators. Good. So if I ever wanted to define an invariant of KTGs, Z, say, it would be enough to define it on the tetrahedron and the Mobius band. Unfortunately, there are relations. They're not independent. I can't just set them arbitrarily. So let me show you what is the prettiest relation. The prettiest relation is the one shown there. So maybe I'll explain it. Maybe I'll use the screen now. So you can take three tetrahedra, which are kind of, well, in this configuration, and then you do the vertex connect sum here and the vertex connect sum here, you get this picture, right? And then you slide this edge to here the way we did before, taking over states, and unzip, and you get this picture. This picture is an unknotted triangular prism looked at from above. right? But I can get a triangular prism, and not a triangular prism, by using only two tetrahedra just as well. Namely, take two tetrahedra facing each other this way, and simply do a vertex connect sound, and you get this picture, which is the same as that. Okay? So that's a relation, 3 is equal to 2. Okay? Or 3 copies of the tetrahedra put together in a certain way gives you the same as 2 copies of a tetrahedron put together in a certain way. And by the way, well, here's sort of a different presentation, if you wish. And if you dualize this picture, this becomes the so-called Pachner move. So if you've ever seen the Pachner move of on triangulations on 3 manifolds, this is exactly it. This is the dual of the Pachner move. Okay. Then there are more relations. Well, 1 or 2 more. There is sort of the relation that the tetrahedron has to be symmetric. There is a mild number of further relations that I don't want to show. Okay? But anyway, the claim is that, the claim is that with these relations, the claim is that if you set phi to be z of the tetrahedron, the invariant of a tetrahedron, then these relations become the relations defining associators. So specifically, the 3 equal 2 relations that I've just shown become equivalent to the Drinfeld pentagon, whatever that is. So let me explain. Okay? So the first thing is I have to figure out what is A, right? What is the target space of my invariant? So I have to figure out what is A of a non-trivalent graph. Sorry, of a trivalent graph, not yet knotted. Okay? So this is what's the space of core diagrams whose skeleton is this? So, I mean, I could have used augmentation ideals, etc., but it's easier to just capitalize on what we already know. So this comes out to be, so basically you can think of this as singular embeddings of the tetrahedron. So you embed the tetrahedron into R3 in such a way that you are also allowed to have double points. Okay, so you look at things like this, and you look at things like this where you have n double points, modulo things like that where you have n plus 1 double points, and you play the same game as last time, and almost everything is exactly the same. Namely, what you get is the space of core diagrams whose skeleton, so now I need purple chalk because last time I used purple for the chords, but I don't have purple chalk, so I'll use blue. Okay? So you get core diagrams whose skeleton is the trivalent graph you started from, and on top of it there are lots and lots and lots of chords. And of course the chords don't have to be planar. The core diagram does not have to be planar. And since you have here 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 chords, this means that the degree here is equal to 5. The degree is the number of chords. There is also a bracketized version. So there is also a version where you allow internal trivalent graphs, internal trivalent vertices, so trivalent vertices of blue things, distinct from the white trivalent vertices which came from the skeleton of the embedded graph. Completely different. So there is also a version which allows internal vertices, but I don't want to talk about it. It doesn't matter. It's the same. But then you have to mod out by relations.
But here you don't take into account that it's thickened.
In fact, I took into account that it was thickened already when I was talking about a circle. I was talking about a ribbon circle. I mentioned it at some point that I'm really talking about frame knots, so knottings of belts, not knottings of lines.
Right, but I mean the code diagram, there is a way you can draw the code going from outside or inside.
No, it's irrelevant. This does not play.
Okay.
And then you model by relations. What are the relations? So first is the 4T relation, and it's exactly the same. Namely, if you have four T and VI, and let me write them here. So 4T is the following thing. If I have three pieces of strand, and I have a connection between one of them, I can add a connection from here to near this one in four different ways. There is this way, and then there are this way. Well, let me write, let me copy the skeleton four times. So I always have the same vertical strand, the same vertical cord, and then here I can go to here, here I can go to here, here I can go to here, and the 4T relation is that this minus that is equal to this minus that, same as before. Before, I insisted that these would be connected like along the skeleton of a circle. Here, they can be connected to other things, I don't care. Okay? And the proof is exactly the same proof as before. If you remember the proof was local. So it didn't really matter. The proof involved this lasso, and it, so pulling it to the other side, whatever. It didn't really matter whether this gets connected to more complicated structure. So that's one relation. The other relation is the vertex invariance relation. And the vertex invariance comes from a similar thing. Instead of lassoing a double point, you lasso a vertex of the skeleton. And again, you can pull the lasso out, push it up, bring it back in, and you get and this picture becomes the same thing with the lasso above. So these two are the same. On the other hand, I can get from this one to that one by three flips. So a sum of three flips around the vertex is equal to zero. And the relation it becomes, well, it's probably best to write it this way. So here is the vertex written with all edges going in the same direction. So if you have a cord coming from somewhere far away, I don't care where, the sum of the three ways of connecting it near the vertex is equal to zero, and here is a different way of writing it. Are you okay? Good. Now, with these relations, it will turn out that A of a graph is actually much simpler than you may have thought. So, claim A of a graph gamma is equal to, so let's say that it's connected, just for simplicity, A of a connected graph gamma is equal to A of n, a certain number of independent lines, okay? Where this number is, oh my god, the number of edges in the graph minus the number of vertices in the graph, plus one, I think. Okay? Now, in other words, all graphs are essentially the same. Okay? And or A of all graphs is essentially the same. And in fact, this is also the associated graded of the knotting of n lines. So you could be talking about tangles, and the finite type theory of tangles, the knottings of n lines, so things here look like, a knotting of n long lines, so something like this. Okay? So the set of all, the associated graded of the set of all such knottings is this, and I claim that, that's the only thing you will ever get. And in fact, this starts with a topological statement. So in fact, knotted trivalent graphs are actually much simpler than you think. So the set of knottings of a graph gamma is the same as the set of knottings of n strands, where the number n is e minus v plus 1. And again, I'm assuming that it's connected. Okay, so really, the real knot theory here is in the theory of tangles, not in the theory of graphs. But I should say that this is not canonical. So these equalities are not canonical and depend on a little bit of extra choice. And given this extra choice, so really the sort of the content of a knotted trivalent graph is a little bit of combinatorial choice plus the topology of a tangle. Okay. But this combinatorial choice is crucial. Now, so why is this true? It's actually easier to see at the level of knots. So at the level of knots, suppose you have a knotted trivalent graph. So suppose I have a knotting of this thing. Okay? I can mark on it a spanning tree. So what's a spanning tree? It's a tree that connects all edges. Well, it came out line in this case, but in general it might be a tree. You know what, maybe I'll make it more complicated. Okay, now it's now the spanning tree is a tree. Okay? But you see, trees are never knotted. Even if this is knotted, the orange part, you can contract it until it's nearly a point. Mm-hmm. Right? It's the same reason why, right? So when I say knottedness of tangles, I mean do not move the ends. Mm-hmm. But if you are allowed to move the ends, you can slurp everything to a single point. Right? You can choose a point here as well and slurp everything towards this point. Right? Like you slurp pasta. Okay? So this is the same as a single point which had been made a bit thickened, so it's really a little disk, with various edges connecting it from one place to another. Okay? But now you can invert along this around this point. Right? If you just apply inversion, as in complex analysis, this becomes, the disk goes outside, and the tangle is now inside. QED. Okay? So, the same thing which I've just shown at the level of topology also holds on the level of combinatorics. So, let me explain. So, suppose you have a core diagram on this skeleton. So, where's the blue chalk? So I have various cords connecting this from one place to another. Okay? I can again choose a maximal tree. This is where it is not canonical. I have to choose a maximal tree. So I choose a maximal tree. Let's say I choose this one. And then I want to get everything off the tree. Slide everything off the tree. Using the vertex invariance relation, the vertex invariance relation says that the sum of the three ways of connecting something near a vertex is equal to zero. A different way to say it is that up to signs, the way if you want to connect it to one edge, it's equal to the connection to the sum of the connections to the other two. So here I have a vertex connected to the tree near an end of the tree. I can get it out. I can slide it out to the other side, and it goes either to this side or to that side, more precisely the sum of the two. Okay? But now I have one less. Now I take this edge and I connect, and there is nothing in between this one and the end, so I can move it to outside. So it goes to here or here. And then I just keep going. Now, if I want to get rid of this edge, I push it first to here and here. Here I'm already happy. And here I just keep pushing. So at the end, I have all sorts of crap, you know, waste that accumulates on the white edges. And the orange edges got cleaned. And then the slightly non-trivial part of the argument is to show that this is in that this process is independent in the of the choices inside it. Okay? So therefore, the value of the tetrahedron, so the value of the tetrahedron, which really should belong to A of the tetrahedron, once you choose a maximal tree, can be considered as A of three strands, because, well, as you can see here, the complement of a maximal tree in the tetrahedron has 1, 2, 3 remaining edges. So it lives here. But we also had an equation, so it has to satisfy an equation in A of the triangular prism. Now, what's A of a triangular prism? So again, I have to choose a maximal tree. I don't know, it doesn't matter which one you choose. I don't know. Let's choose actually not the one that gives a lovely answer. Let's choose this one. The complement has 1, 2, 3, 4 edges. So it's A of 4 strands. Now, before analyzing this, let me remind you that things here correspond to the universal enveloping of algebra, of a Lie algebra, of a given Lie algebra, tensored with itself 3 times. And things here correspond to the universal enveloping algebra of a Lie algebra, tensored with itself 4 times. Okay? So, so if you apply the low algebra thing, so if you apply, if you look at the tensor, the Lie algebraic tensor, you know, when I said corresponds, I really meant there is a map. Okay? So, if you want to look at the Lie algebraic tensor corresponding to the value of the tetrahedron, it's an element in the universal enveloping algebra cubed, which has to satisfy an equation in the universal enveloping algebra to the fourth. that equation comes out to be the Drinfeld pentagon equation. So this is a well-known equation, or in the theory of of associators. So this becomes the equation, something like delta tensor 1 tensor 1 of phi, so you apply the coproduct to the first component and leave the other two fixed, times 1 tensor 1 tensor delta of phi is equal to phi tensor 1 times 1 delta 1 phi times 1 tensor phi, and that's the pentagon equation. Now, it might look complicated, and perhaps it is complicated, but everything was completely explicit. So it's essentially an exercise to go from this picture of three tetrahedra and two tetrahedra making a prism into this equation. So hints for this, so I'm out of time, but hints for this exercise are here. So here is here are three tetrahedra, and I've cleaned up the black maximal tree, and marked the remaining three as 1, 2, and 3, and I did it for each one of them, and I'm sort of tracing where the chords that connect to 1, 2, and 3 in each one of them go as I apply the operations. So when I do the first connect sum, they are placed on this skeleton as shown here. When I do the second connect sum, when I do the unzip over here, things move a little bit, but they move as shown here. And finally, when I regard this in the complement of the black maximal tree shown here, I get, well, the original things have moved as follows, and you can interpret it as this product. And when you do the same for the other side of the pentagon, you get this, which is the other side of the Drinfeld pentagon. I'm out of time, so definitely there will be no details. But what would I have said if I had more time? I think if I had more time, I would have given more details. But that's the picture. This is it. Somebody should ask me. Sorry, now I remember what I would have said. Right? Somebody should ask me how this is related to parenthesized braids. Are you asking me?
I need to digest a bit. I see the...
There is a much more...
So I have a question. How is this related to parenthesized braids?
Sorry? Okay. Excellent question. Thank you, Pascal. Wonderful question. So, there is yet another presentation of knot theory in combinatorial terms, which is less elegant, I'm afraid, but much more common, in much more common use. And this is, it has to do with parenthesized braids. So what's a parenthesized braid? So a braid, I think you know what it is. It's a thing like this. Okay? And parenthesized means that you choose a parenthetization of the ends on both ends. So you pretend that the ends are like objects in a non-associative algebra, and you declare how you would multiply them. It's completely kind of, I don't see how, why anyone in topology would have guessed this. Okay? But you choose a parenthetization for the ends. And then it's a bit hard to describe the operations. So one way to describe it is to say that you are allowed to double strands or delete strands or multiply braids, and then you also have to add caps and discuss them. Another way to say it is to say that it's a category of operads or operad of categories or something like that. Okay? But all I want to tell you is what is the relationship between this and KTGs? Well, you see, if you have a parenthesized braid, so you have a braid with a parenthetization of the top and the bottom, well, you can simply, a parenthetization is the same as a tree. So you can simply, if these are innermost parenthesized, you can connect them by a vertex. Mm. If then if these two are multiplied next, you can connect them by a vertex. If these, this one is multiplied with this, you can connect them with a vertex. And then you can do the same here. And finally, and similarly, you can do here. So a tree here and a tree here is exactly the same as a parenthetization here and a parenthetization here. And finally, if you wanted a closed graph, you could just close. So this is a subset of knotted trivalent graphs. Okay? Not all of them. So, but it's sufficient. Now, the Drinfeld associator, the usual picture for it is this. So it's the trivial braid, but it connects two different parenthetizations. This is the standard picture of a Drinfeld associator. And now let's see what this process does to it. You add a cup here, you add a cup here and a thing coming out, you add a cup here and a thing coming out, and you connect top to the bottom, and this is a tetrahedron. So that's all. Oh, and yeah. Yes.
This, could you explain me the coupling operation?
Sorry?
Could you explain me the coupling operation?
Cabling operation in the case of KTGs or in the case
of the knot?
What?
In the case of the knot. The coupling.
Cabling?
Cabling, yes.
You said that there are some operations on knots, you connect to some, and then you said, oh, there is also the cabling operation on knots.
I said it right at the beginning, yes. So the cabling operation on knots is just, so, again, it's a lovely operation, but it's not very good. If you want to make knots finitely generated, that's not going to help you. So if you have a knot, to cable it just means to unzip the edge, the long edge. So basically you replace every strand with two parallel copies. So basically if you want, you just trace another copy around. So this is cabling. But you only get more, the knots that you get are very non-generic. If you wanted to get, the figure eight knot out of the trefoil, that's not going to help you. By the way, in my language, if I wanted to unzip a knot, to cable a knot, I could simply add the cabling operation to the algebra, and it's well behaved. But actually I don't need to, because I could do a connect sum with a fixed given knot, namely the theta graph, and unzip. And if you unzip the theta graph now, it's the same as cabling the original knot. So really the unzip operations were kind of derived from or cousins of cablings, but they become much more powerful when the thing we're talking about is not a trivalent graph.
So I try to get the old construction is a bit involved. So you say, okay, you can the space of noted, embedded noted trivial and graph is like generated by two elements, and you say at a level of invariance, since you say we can compute the configuration integrals, we understand it on the operation.
Yeah.
So you are sort of saying if you know that guy there, the value of the integral on the tetrahedron, then you can get anything out of this knowing how the operation.
Yeah.
Concretely.
Ah.
How does it help?
That's a $1 million. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, you are right. So, if I wanted to compute, so really what I said is that in order to compute the invariant of any knot whatsoever, it's enough that I know the invariant of the tetrahedron. Also, the Mobius band, the Mobius band turns out to be easy. Okay? So it's enough that I know this invariant, or one single associator. So one can prove that associators exist. And there are several proofs. One proof is, or one sketch of proof, in which the details have not been completed, is to use configuration space integrals. Another sketch is to use the Kontsievich integral, or holonomies of the Knisvich-Homologikov connection, and this one is complete and completely solid. Another proof is algebraic, so you can construct such a Z degree by degree by some complicated algebraic construction. But at the end, you never get something you can hold. You only get very complicated formulas with which it is extremely difficult to really work. Mm-hmm. So in practice, well, okay, I think the record on computing associators is held by myself. I've computed one up to degree 10. So in principle, I can compute the all finite type invariants up to degree 10 using such an associator, using the procedures that were shown here. But if you want to go to degree 12, you need a really big computer.
Do we get all associators from your machine? All of them, or just
which machine?
Well, computing the, let's say, all associators arise from expansions in your sense.
An associator is equivalent to an expansion
For
noted trivial graphs. Well, okay, sorry, I'm oversimplifying. So, I've oversimplified. So, when you say an associator, you usually mean, well, something that solves the pentagon and the hexagon equation, the other equation, right? But it's a bit loose in which space. Okay? So there are several reasonable target spaces. And in fact, I've talked about two already on this blackboard. You know, one target space is this one. You choose a Lie algebra and you try to solve in this target space. And another target space is this one, which is sort of universal for all Lie algebras. And there is another target space, which is a subset of this one. Mm-hmm. Okay, a subspace of this one. And this is the subspace in which you insist that all the chords will be horizontal. The way I described it, the chords didn't need to be horizontal. In fact, it didn't even make sense. But you know, if you change from this picture to this picture, you can insist that all the chords will be horizontal. So the ones I've computed to degree 10 are Z's. Now, Z's are equivalent. So finding a horizontal chord associator is exactly the same, exactly, precisely, the same as finding an expansion for braids, for parenthesized braids, which is well behaved under this extra operation, so this operat structure as well.
and finding a not necessarily horizontal chord associator is exactly the same as finding an expansion for KTGs. Okay? Now, as I mentioned, braids map into KTGs. So if you find an associator for braids, you can map it and get to KTGs and get an associator for KTGs, but not the other way around.
So when you put the horizontal one, it's like the universal looping algebra, like the Kono-Greenfeld?
So the Kono-Greenfeld, so if you put only horizontal one, this becomes the Kono-Greenfeld algebra, which maps into U of G just as well.
Yeah.
Well, it's just the restriction of the map I've described.
But for me, the Kono, I'm thinking about the Greenfeld Kono algebra is for me an enveloping algebra.
But this is different.
Okay.
This thing is also the universal enveloping algebra of some Lie algebra. I don't know, let's just call it L3 because there are three spans here. But L3 has nothing to do with G.
No, but the L3 is the one generated by this horizontal chord.
Yes,
the
L3 is the Greenfeld Kono algebra, yes. Has nothing to do with it. I mean, it maps here. Given if you choose a Lie algebra G, a finite dimensional G, Lie algebra G, you get a map going this way. But G is not L, right? Here's there is a tangent 3 and here's there isn't.
Right.
Okay, it's a different, they play a different role. Okay, I hope you at least had fun with this generation story, the Vietnam era story, otherwise I think. Okay.
Okay, so tomorrow is at 2.